Football Weekly Extra.
Amid the biggest recession since my hairline, Football Weekly is keeping interest rates high. With today, the Premier League. After some outstanding performances for Man United from Vidic, Scott Carson and Rob Stiles, we ask, is it time for Fred Dunn and co. to start paying out on United? Meanwhile, it's not just the banks who need bailing out, as Robinho becomes the latest player to clash with the boys in blue. We ask down the bottom, who's ready for a charge in the relegation battle? Abroad, it's the thought that dare not speak its name, but after two goals in two matches and a man of the match performance Wednesday, is David Beckham actually rather good? And a look forward to the weekend's Premier League action, Liverpool-Chelsea and the entire bottom half facing each other. Core. Hello all. Joining me here today on Football Weekly Extra, very special lineup actually. I'm really looking forward to this one. Barry Glendening, first of all.
Hello.
Hi. We're doing this titles thing. Barry, just explain again who you are for everyone.
Is it absolutely necessary?
Erstwhile stand-up comedian, terror of the posts. What else? And by night?
By night, vegger on sofas.
Right, okay. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
From the Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Yes. Yeah,
and also the Guardian's German football correspondent.
Indeed.
And Guten Morgen to you. And Rob Smythe, just joining us. I have to say, Rob, you just walked in, didn't know you were going to be beaming up. And although, luckily, you did bring some knitwear, because it's cold out here.
Don't start with the scarf, James.
Right, or the bobble hat.
Yes.
Yeah. Rob, so glad you're here, because I've got item one here, midweek. What has the midweek round told us? And you're our go-to guy for everything on Manchester United. Is this the last that their title rivals see of them, really, apart from clouds of dust?
Maybe. There was something very ominous about the way they kind of went about it at West Brom. But you have to say, it was West Brom who are bottom and they had 10 men. So I'd be loath to draw too many conclusions yet. But the fact they've kind of got through this period with so many injuries and now have people like Ferdinand, Park Ji-sung, who is kind of a first-team player, even though he's not perceived as such, and Wes Brown back. It's fairly ominous, I would have thought. And Berbatov and Carrick are starting to really link very nicely, which is also kind of a benefit to United. But I wouldn't say it's kind of done and dusted by any means yet, because they have this fixture pile-up, of course, which you can't really discount.
Tell us about the fixture pile-up, Rob.
Well, they're already one game behind in the league. They're going to be two games behind because of the Carling Cup, and potentially more because of FA Cup and Champions League. So you can end up with a scenario. I mean, United fans will always cite in 1991-92, they had four games in a week, of which they took 1 point and Leeds kind of overhauled them. So there's kind of history as well to fear in that respect.
All right. Well, on the numbers front, the good news is that that's now 11 clean sheets, a new Premier League record.
Yeah, which is odd because everyone knows how good the defence is. But the odd thing about this is that the defence hasn't been consistent. Ever has only played, I think, three games. Ferdinand maybe six. John O'Shea's played eight, which makes it a minor miracle that they've kept 11 clean sheets. But it is an outstanding achievement. It also reflects kind of how far the resources are, the disparity in resources in the Premiership. You'd never have got this. United conceded 10, Chelsea 13 or something. It shows how difficult it's become to score against them. Liverpool have a really good defence as well.
We did mention Rob Stiles and Scott Carson. Scott Carson, how did he ever become an England goalie? Ditto for Rob Stiles and a Premier League referee would seem to be the question after Wednesday. Scott Carson,
How does any England keeper ever become an England keeper?
Is that it? Is it the lack of competition? But Martin O'Neill used to rate Scott Carson. He used to be talked about as the next big thing.
And he quickly got rid of him.
Right.
Carson's made some horrific errors this year. It's staggering. I think it is, like Rafa says, just who else is there?
Is it just that in goal for West Brom, he just sees far more shots than anybody else and thus makes a proportionally higher number of mistakes? But it was a hideous mistake against United.
Maybe he's made some terrible... I mean, some keepers would thrive on that kind of constantly being in the action.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, Barry, you a former keeper yourself.
Am I?
When he was at Charlton, if producer Pete's not mistaken, he got player of the season. So there you go.
In the year they got relegated.
Do you not think in the modern game, certainly in England, keepers are kind of losing it a lot quicker? Robinson, we've seen. In the past, they could have one or two bad errors and they would come back. But now I don't know whether it's the media focus, but they just seem to be crushed psychologically really quickly. And that's happened to Carson. I think he's shot at the top level now.
Is this not just a generation in which English football is not producing good keepers?
That might be quite a simple solution. Yeah.
I think it is. I mean, you go through that.
Well, they are mediocre. Yeah, exactly. Mm. The fact James is still being played at 64 or whatever he is kind of...
And David James,
is reflective of how poor the crop are.
Roy A1 says, Rob effing Stars, has there ever been a worse referee? The man has zero judgment. Was it that bad, his decision to send off
Was it Al Robinson?
I think it was the wrong decision, but I can also see how he arrived at the conclusion that Robinson should have been.
Robinson's right foot is 5 yards from the ball and goes into the man's chest. Where's it going?
Well, no, well, that's the thing. His foot doesn't go into the guy's because he pulled his.
He's still
foot
out of control.
Back in, and it was his knee that went
he's
in.
Still he's, out of control of his
he's
body.
He's committed to the challenge, but it was a fair challenge to make.
He did genuinely try to pull out of it, but
having said that, this
looks like knife's in the back when it got 2/3 of the way, and I tried to pull out. He's still out of control of his movements, and when your feet are off the ground, I think you take that risk.
I tend to agree. I think it's reckless to the point of.
And certainly from the referee's perspective, he couldn't see whether it was foot or knee from where he was.
I was doing the clock watch, and loads of people emailing saying Rob Stiles, la la la, and I fully expected to be a horrific decision, but I think it's fair enough. I don't have a problem with it at all.
All right, well, there you go. United now 2 points clear with a game in hand, although clearly that does mean fixture pile-up. Mm. Glass half empty, Rob. who's going to stop them? Not Liverpool, surely. A 1-1 draw for them midweek with Wigan, their fifth draw in seven. Now, Rafa Benitez blamed Sunday's FA Cup draw on the fact that Everton were really defensive. What is he going to blame this one on? Because Wigan plainly weren't really defensive.
We didn't have four centre-forwards on
both. Yeah, well, apparently so. I wasn't counting, but Steve Bruce announced that, and I'm happy to take his word because he's a lovely chat. Rafa called the second half crazy, and when pressed for an explanation, he just explained that it was crazy. And I think most people would regard as crazy some of his decisions, like when you want to win the game, you take Steven Gerrard off with only 8 minutes to play.
Well, if you need to win a game with 8 minutes to play, Steven Gerrard definitely has more form in the field of pulling last-minute winners out of the bag than...
He cited tiredness, but...
Robbie Keane has.
With Gerrard, tiredness doesn't really come into it. You know, he's sort of bloke who just gets by on kind of energy and kind of desire. I think because he originally planned it at 1-0 up, which I think is fine because you feel tiredness more when you're defending than attacking. So Keane can run around like an idiot and chase the ball. But as soon as it goes to 1-1, you have to have Gerrard on the pitch. I just think it's unfathomable.
Mm. Well,
and he's been playing exceptionally well too.
Rafa, you and I had an exceptional lunch yesterday in the company of Gabriele Marcotti. And I was rather staggered that the first part of this lunch, indeed almost the entirety of it, was taken up by you and largely Gabriele laying into the English press for victimising Rafa Benitez over his zonal defending and that.
It wasn't a problem last night. Zonal defending, was it?
No, it wasn't. You're right, it wasn't.
Just inept defending.
No, but what's going on with Benitez? It's almost as if he's writing a book about how to lose.
I don't think anything's going on. I think the same flaws and failures that we've seen from him over the last few years in the English League have just come back to haunt him. He tends to get things wrong with substitutions and lineups. His record in the transfer market is not as good as it needs to be for a club who can only really pay one or two top players every year. They need to be really spot on every time for them to have a serious chance. And even in the face of the weakness of United and Chelsea, they just haven't been able to pull away and haven't been able to get a result. They're still the masters of containment and of grinding out results in Europe, but when the exact opposite is needed from them, breaking down teams with 11 men behind the ball, they can't do it because they're not set up to do that. That's been a problem throughout the years.
Paul Doyle wrote a blog on this a couple of weeks ago about Benitez always uses the word control. We controlled the game. And he's obsessed with this kind of tactical control to the point where everything can be planned. Last night he was saying the game was crazy, and when it's crazy, anything could happen. And you could see his disgust at the idea of an open game. Mm. He doesn't like that, and of course the problem with that is 5 draws in 7. You don't lose a game, but you're not picking up 3 points with the consistency that wins a league.
He also, last year when somebody asked, why are Liverpool doing so well in Europe but can't seem to crack the Premier League? He said, well, in Europe, there's a lot more control. And in the Premier League, there's all these 50-50 balls. You don't know where the ball is going. And the implication is that the game is not sophisticated enough for his sophisticated tactics.
And yet, paradoxically, his biggest triumph in Istanbul was when it was a crazy game and there was no control as well.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Didi Haman brought
a bit
of resemblance.
That he is
of control
freak.
that was the headline on Doyle's blog. He definitely is
a technocrat in the Mourinho mould.
Mm. Mourinho would take risks to win games, wouldn't he? He'd often have at 1-1 at home, say to Everton, Mourinho would put 4 forwards on. He'd realise that 7 wins and a defeat is better than 3 wins and 5 draws.
Rob and I were saying on the way up here today that just Benitez seems to be trying to be far too clever for his own good, and that he shouldn't tried to be so clever, and the wins would probably come.
We can't stand that kind of behaviour.
It's strange because a lot of
problem here.
It's really strange in a way because a lot of players, with the exception of Torres, are probably having better seasons this year individually than they had last year. I think Benayoun's looking quite good. Gerrard was having a fantastic season. I think he's probably on course of being the best player in the league.
Well, granted, those two players, but which other Liverpool players having a better season this time around? Alonso is.
I think Alonso is. I think
having
Alonso
a better season this time around than last time.
Yeah, yes, so, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think he's been absolutely central. I don't know why didn't he play last time. Was he rested or was he injured? But I do think
he was missed.
When they played two holding players rather than a holding player and a deep lying player, Alonso, I think
I'll try another
difference.
One. Mascherano.
Yeah.
I think he just kind of ticks
sort of the same. I mean, Lucas even is much improved, even though, unfortunately, that's not enough to be a decent player.
Right. Well, interesting. Let's give a bit of credit to Wigan, though. Plucky Wigan, because they just, lost a whole bundle of exciting players. As Men Call Me Phil points out, there's nothing more exciting than Steve Bruce signing a player you've never heard anything about. Hugo Rodallego, apparently, judging by the free kick which he almost put in, looks to be a bit exciting. Colombian player scored 11 in 9 for the Colombians under 20, a national team. And of course, Mido scoring on his own. It'd be a good day for recently signed forwards because Craig Bellamy got off the mark. We'll talk more about that later on. But well done, Wigan. Liverpool are hosting Chelsea this weekend. Now, if you're talking about the teams that are allegedly going to be challenging Man United, however good or bad Man United may be, that they just don't seem to have the competition at the moment, unless Chelsea or Liverpool can get it together. And Sunday's going to be a very interesting indication vis-a-vis that. Chelsea coming off a 2-0 win over Borough. Salomon Kalou, who seems to be in improving form at the moment.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think it's all set up for another fantastic Man United weekend with that game, because there's certainly going to be one big loser, probably two big losers.
You see a draw at Anfield.
Yeah.
What's happened to Cole and Bissouma? I know that back at the start of the season, we were all raving about Chelsea, and it was largely to do with A, Deco, and B, the fact that their fullbacks were marauding Brazilian-star fullbacks. Everybody's noticed this and is doing what? Pinning them back by the use of their own wide midfield men? Well, what's the story? Why are they now no longer getting forward?
I'm not sure Cole was it. He was getting forward a lot, but I'm not sure ever since he went to Chelsea under Mourinho, I think he hasn't been the same offensive player. Now, he did attack more at the start of the season than he had before, but he's still not the player we saw at Arsenal. Bazinga was exceptional. I don't know, maybe it is just a natural levelling off you kind of have for an overseas player coming to English football. I don't know. I haven't seen enough Chelsea to be absolutely sure. I know Liverpool, when they won, they did really well by Riera pinning Bazinga back, but that's only one specific game.
I think Rob's the first journalist I've ever heard describe Ashley Cole as not being offensive.
Well, there you go. Other quick notes on the weekend. Aston Villa are now 5 points clear of Arsenal there after their victory over... Who did they beat? Portsmouth, wasn't it?
Portsmouth away.
They'll be facing Wigan. Interesting for Heskey, that one. Of course, Heskey scoring on his debut. They've had 6 straight away wins now with that win at Portsmouth. Arsenal had a 1-1 draw with Everton. Van Persie again in outstanding form. And next up for them, West Ham.
It's a big game, that.
Yeah, West Ham are in cracking form. In the last 5 games, they've won 4 and drawn the other. They beat Hull 2-0. They've just picked up Savio Enserrico. Now, Rafa Honigstein, you're in a position to tell us all about this young and exciting...
I'm not sure I am, because...
Are you not?
Well, I haven't seen much of Brescia in Serie B recently.
He hasn't featured that much. Yeah.
I've seen him play for Germany in the under-19 European Championships that they won, and he played very well there.
What kind of player is he?
Well, he's a sort of a number 10, second striker, or winger, if you want. Attacking midfielder. Versatile and very nifty, small little player.
Yeah, is he not tiny? Does he not make Gianfranco Zola look like Peter Crouch?
I think they're sort of similar height.
All right.
But it's, of course, the move raised a lot of eyebrows in Germany, because while it is true that there were bigger German clubs, big German clubs, also looking at him, no one would have been prepared to pay the sort of money that was reported, or even half the money.
Right,
that
which
was
is
reported.
What I think probably was paid.
Yeah,
it does seem that figure's been exaggerated.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard from a reliable source, who we've had lunch with yesterday, that Breschen, in fact, only received something about €4.5 million, and that even that payment is said to be staggered for 3 years.
Right.
But even so, I mean, for a 19-year-old who's never played a top-flight game in his life, that's a lot of money.
There's 3-17 in the second
history
division.
Of kind of People have done well in Italy, particularly Serie B, coming over here and being less than useless. Grabby, Macaroni, I think Bianchi, I know he played in Serie A, but he hadn't played for a big club. Hmm. I don't know if there's any reason why that would be, but it struck me in that respect, it's quite a weird signing.
Oh, good stuff,
it's interesting also because you think that West Ham, with all their problems, financial, and, okay, they're doing much better in the league. I guess the relegation threat is not as imminent.
They've just sold Bellamy for £14.
Yeah, but you'd think that almost that they'd use it in a lot more conservative manner, buying somebody really experienced who's just going to steady the ship and tide them over for next season, rather than, I'd say, gambling it on someone who might come good in a couple of years' time.
Well,
at this given moment,
the guy who brought him into Brescia was, of course, Gianluca Nelli, who's now sporting director or whatever, technical director at West Ham. So obviously he believes in him. I was going to ask, unless anybody wants to continue this chat about Sevilla in Sireco, about Arshavin. Is that people keep saying that it's about to go through now? It's a deal that sounds like serious trouble to me.
So more hassle than it's worth. Yeah. Almost. It's just incredibly tedious. You hear so many reports of kind of wages and add-ons. And particularly given that Arsenal don't really need yet another kind of scheming kind of inside left, I would go for someone else personally. But
foreign, volatile, moody, sometimes genius, sometimes doesn't turn up. What club could possibly come in for him?
Like yourself.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, United host Everton. Very quick note on that, you Barry?
Well, Everton's record at Old Trafford is absolutely dismal. They last won there in the 92-93 season and have accrued a whopping 3 points at Old Trafford ever since. Now,
they played really well last season, even though they lost. They did play really well.
Yeah, it seems to be some sort of arrangement. I'm sure the lawyers will be in with a big gun, if I say it. It seems to be some sort of arrangement where David Moyes just says, here's 3 points, Sir Alex, every season.
Scottish conspiracy.
Yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. I think, though, that Everton have done really well against the big teams because of their ultra-negative, if you want, or ultra-inventive 4-6-0 formation, and I could see them causing United a bit of trouble for a change.
Right. Well, there you go. That's part one. We'll talk about the relegation battle later. I've got a note here. It's the most congested bottom since Barry handled the cooking in Vienna. Last eight teams separated by just 3 points. That, though, in the meantime, is it for part one. If you want to know more about these stories, make sure you visit guardian.co.uk/football. Obviously, I'm not talking about the Vienna culinary one there. The other stuff, the football stuff. Part two's up next.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Right, now it's time to shut down your conventional wisdom and give it a reboot, because we've got an update coming in from the San Siro. David Beckham, actually a rather special player. Rob Smythe, stare at me how you will, but we said he wouldn't play at Milan. He started every game. We said he wouldn't take free kicks with Pirlo and Ronaldinho and Seydorf. He did. And yesterday scored his second goal in two games. We said he wouldn't have an impact. He was rated man of the match. And as soon as he went off, the team Genoa equalised.
Surely the famous Milanello lep already working.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Or could it be the fact that we had Paolo Bandini, I think, hinting at this the other day. It's a team that isn't packed with desperate, hungry young players. These are a lot of players who've either been World Footballer of the Year or done that and won this, etc., etc., etc. Pato's an exception to that. Beckham clearly is a man who is fighting for something, has a point to prove, and he really played like that yesterday.
33.
All over the pitch.
He's probably, the second youngest person in the squad.
Again with this cliche, Rob.
Has he left his wife in America?
I'd like to know, where is he playing?
Well, nominally wide right, but they don't play wide, Milan. He's kind of one of three central midfielders, largely.
Alongside Pirlo and...
Pirlo was there, Ambrosini, and then how do you... Kaká's in the mix as well, but he's more of a forward.
So is it Kaká and Seydorf behind the striker?
No, well, yesterday it was Pato and... Pato with Kaká off him, and then you had Pirlo and Seydorf and Ambrosini and Beckham.
I must say, I've been really surprised at how well he's done. I think you have to give him credit because
he's made... You know, he's made the great minds of football, Fabio Capello at Real Madrid, Steve McLaren at England. He's made them go back on their word before and bring him back. He does that.
Is it because the pace at Serie A is now so low that Beckham looks like a really energetic player?
I was going to say that. It's just a poor reflection on the quality of Serie A. And we've been right and you, James Richardson, have been wrong. It's even worse than the MLS. That's how bad Serie A is.
I have to say, it's a very interesting viewpoint. Will he go back? he said, moving along. Will he go back to the MLS?
Of course not.
Of course not. I don't know. There are lots of reasons for him not to, because he's apparently a shoe-in for the England squad on February the 11th, and if he goes back now, Capello came out to see him play Genoa. Capello obviously has got high esteem for Milan, unlike some people around here. It's going to jeopardise potentially what is potentially now a place in the World Cup squad, which Beckham obviously didn't think was going to be an option when he went to America in the first place. However, the word from both the Italian and English press is that although he does seem to be into the idea, Simon Fuller is now in Milan discussing things with him, his manager. Victoria has announced she doesn't fancy it and won't be moving to Milan, which is a bit of a deal maker in my opinion.
Exactly.
She doesn't want to put her kids through another foreign school and that. So we shall see. Other Italian news, Barry, because I know you're about to ask me. Yes, it's true. Inter are now six clear after they went down to Catania. Jose Mourinho was suspended and had to go and sit up in the stands, which was a dangerous proposition because you recall that Catania and Jose Mourinho, they don't see very much eye to eye. Yes. Pietro Lamonaco, somebody should smack him in the teeth, he said after the first game back at the start of the season. Anyway, Inter won 2-0, despite the fact that Muntari, anyway, he got sent off again. And
I have a question.
Yes.
Did Jose, in the fine tradition of when he was suspended,
did he
wear a very thick scarf and a woolly hat and a balaclava?
No, he was in a little kind of glass box.
All right.
Probably just as well.
So he could communicate.
Why
with
would
the
he
bench
dress or? Up as Rob Smythe?
So he
why
can
wouldn't
tradition
he?
Of
cunningly disguise his earpiece so he can communicate right. with the bench.
But everybody just
and then get smuggled into the dressing room at halftime in a big basket of dirty.
There's a lawyer waving
straps.
A gun. Over there. Right. Anyway, now other Italian news, Barry. Juve are now six behind Inter because they lost against the least informed team possible, Udinese, who hadn't won in 11. In those 11 games, they'd had 8 defeats and 3 draws. And they managed to beat Juve with great goals from Quagliarella, who was a bit of a favourite of mine, and Di Natale. No Ale Del Piero. Del Piero wasn't playing. Giovinco was the atomic ant, and he was apparently a bit rubbish. Cassano scored a great goal for Sampdoria, who beat Lazio. Lazio plummeting down the table. Roma continue to win 2-1 against Palermo. They're now just 1 point off the top 4. Genoa currently in fourth place. They, of course, got that 1-1 draw with Milan. Ooh, Bnuman mentions the Mazzara Villabati Sicilian, I think they're in the Eccellenza or something like that, a semi-pro league, where Mario Urbini put Mazzara in front with a brilliant back post volley, and it is a brilliant volley, and naturally goes over to the fans to celebrate. Joined by his teammates, they're there in front of the fans giving it all that. Unbeknownst to them, the referee has not only disallowed the goal for some spurious reason, but also allowed opponents Villabati to take the free kick immediately, and they have bombed down the other end of the field and have scored themselves. This was in Sicily. You can imagine the reaction. Three players go over to the referee to find out what on earth's going on. He sends them off. The game has to be suspended. There's a police escort, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, Barry, you're not impressed by this because, as you say, it happened to Getafe last year, but it was quite entertaining if you want to check it out on there.
I'm not that unimpressed. Really. Oh, okay. You've already told me this story this morning. Right. I could only feign enthusiasm for it once.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Vinny Q. James, can you spare a word on the Fiorentina player Marco Donadel, who's been linked with Newcastle? What would he provide to midfield? Donadel, interesting one. Captain of Italy's under-21 outfit, as you probably know. Had ligament problems in the past. Hasn't done for Fiorentina, I think, what people thought he was going to do, because he's got a big shot on him and that. But he's generally known as a battling midfielder. Who, you know, picks up cards and stuff because he is a battling midfielder. And I think it's probably City has top Johnny Burrell look-alike. So that's going to be an important quality. There you go. Is that what Newcastle need? Do they have anything like that?
Well, they need somebody to fit in for Joey Barton now because he's just broken his metatarsal.
Indeed
he's going to be
out
for 10 weeks or so.
Bundesliga, Rafa. The Bundesliga's back.
Hooray.
Hooray. Hamburg are taking on Bayern. Mm. And Hoffenheim taking on Energy Cottbus. Mm. Yeah. Go on, make this exciting for us.
Biggest league in Europe.
In what terms? Attendance?
Yeah.
All right.
Biggest country in Europe.
Mm. Mm. All right.
Big. No, it's.
Germany's going to is the best place for the recession, etc., etc. So
yeah, there was a study that came out a couple of days ago that said in 5-10 years' time the Bundesliga will have overtaken the Premier League.
Right.
I'd like to believe it. I don't actually do, but it's still interesting. I mean, obviously the whole take is yes because of the structure, no debt, big stadiums, etc. And a TV market that hasn't really grown that much yet, they're in a good position. But of course, in the meantime, the value of a league is almost purely judged on international success.
Yeah.
And unless Bayern do something really special in the Champions League, I think the Bundesliga is still going to be seen as a second rate.
The only way to overtake the Premier League, surely, is to become more popular internationally, beyond the international success of the clubs. It is the TV rights worldwide that makes the Premier League what it is.
Well, it's first of all, it's the national TV rights, and the international rights help.
But where they really trump every other country is on the amount of money they make from international rights, the Premier League.
Yeah, but so, it's still, in relative terms, it's still that the deal from Sky and BBC is still so much more valuable than the relative deals that Germany make, you know, domestically. So internationally, they're miles away as well, but they couldn't even make that up.
The German and French leagues, say, have never captured the imagination in England the way the Italian and Spanish have. And, right, the French league is pretty dull, I have to say. And I can say that because Paul Doyle isn't here to punch me in the face. But why do you think... Is it just purely because we're not as exposed to the German league that English people aren't as into it?
I think the thing with Germany is that it's not seen as foreign and exotic enough. It's actually quite similar to English football in many ways. Germany has always looked to Italy as well a little bit in terms of tactics, etc., and is a bit of a hybrid when it comes to the game. They like the physical side, but they also like a bit more technical. But I just think in terms of marketing, it's never been a good proposition for... You know, to say to an English football fan, go watch German football. I guess they had a chance when Kevin Keegan was there, but that's 30 years ago.
Mm.
So, yeah. You know, so it's been a long time since.
It would need English players going out. It just has a very blue-collar image, doesn't it? Because they're so financially conservative, or have been traditionally.
Mm. Yeah, and that's it. And that's why even, although they're really benefiting now from this whole collapse of a lot of clubs and, you know, a lot of trouble in Spain and Italy as well, certainly the second-tier clubs and a lot of trouble, I still don't think they're really going to go out and buy all these, hoover up all these players, because they're still going to stick to their very conservative way of things. I mean, even Bayern Munich, who turn over ridiculous amount of money, if you include the stadium, which is wholly owned by them at the moment, they've turned over 368 million euros last year. But even they have said, we're going to face serious cutbacks when it comes to sponsorship, marketing money, etc. So instead of signing Gomez, who would be available for 25 million euros, we've decided to sign Ivica Olic, the Croatian from Hamburg, who's coming on the Bosman. So, you know, just see just how risk averse they are.
Okay, I have two questions there.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you say Gomez and 25 million euro in the same sentence?
Yes. That is his clause, yeah. It hasn't really done much since the Euros
because he was great in the Euros, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant in the Euros.
Jimbo was still reeling from that miss against Austria.
Austria, sorry.
Back on a more sporting sort of context about the Bundesliga and the second half of the season starting, I think it's the first ever season when the title was won in the winter break, because not only have Bayern had sort of the best winter break ever, winning everything, everybody fit, playing fantastic football. Now they pummeled Stuttgart in the cup on Tuesday night, 5-1 away. It could have been 10 easily because they stopped playing after 60 minutes when they were 5-0 up.
Is that policy? I know that in Italy, if you're 5-1 up, you back off.
And they were 5-0 up.
Sorry,
yeah.
5.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you
it wasn't. Policy, I mean, they started doing sort of, it all turned into Cristiano Ronaldo's doing 100 million stepovers and not going anywhere. And then Jens Lehmann actually even complained to some of the Bayern players saying, stop taking the proverbial out of us and start playing football again. But it didn't, because they didn't see the point. But while they've had a fantastic second pre-season, Hoffenheim have been really, really unlucky, because not only did they lose Vedad Ibisevic, the leading goal scorer of the Bundesliga, to a cruciate ligament injury, so out for the season at least until May. They've also had problems with Ubasi, who picked up an injury just before the winter break and is still not fully fit. He's the sort of probably the number second most important player. And Carlos Eduardo, who's a fantastic Brazilian midfielder, was involved in fisticuffs with Ivica Olic in a friendly, and they've both been suspended for two games because they were both sent off in a friendly, and they're not happy. And some of the Hamburg players are sort of alleging a pro-Bayern Munich conspiracy on the German FA because Bayern are facing Hamburg in the first game on Friday night, as you said, and Hoffenheim are, of course, their rivals.
Thanks, Rafa. Excellent stuff there. We'll have posts from you in a second or two, not you, Rafa, the listeners. And we'll also be looking at an incredible weekend in the relegation battle of the Premier League right after this.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
If you want to leave messages for us, and I bet you do, go to the Football Weekly page, which can be found at guardian.ku.uk/football, or find us on Facebook. Marty Morrissey, talking about fullbacks. I'm not sure, were we talking about fullbacks? But Marty Morrissey wants to anyway. He says, Dani Alves, who Sid was talking about, and Maicon, last three World Cups were won by teams with the best marauding fullbacks. Grosso and Zambrotta in 2006, Cafu and Carlos in 2002, Turam and Lizarazu in 98. If you look at the Italian goals, apart from the final, they all came from overlapping fullbacks. Yeah. So should we be betting on the Brazilians, says Marty Morrissey, in 2010? Because they've got Dani Alves and Maicon, who have to be the best fullback pairing in world football.
A bit early, I think, to start betting on the Brazilians.
Well, I think when you bet early, isn't this right, Barry, you get better odds?
Not necessarily.
All right, then. Okay, well, thanks for that. Let's see, what else have we got?
Do you know who Marty Morrissey is? He's GAA, Gaelic Games reporter for RT.
Is that the actual Marty Morrissey?
I have my doubts. The actual Marty Morrissey would not make a point that erudite about sport.
Right, interesting.
He's a strange little man who looks like he was bred in a jar.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. Was he all kind of hunched up? Or?
Yeah, he's just a peculiar looking fella. And he famously asked an Irish Olympic boxer, Francie Barrett, who was a member of the travelling community after or before a fight, if he ever, or no, he asked Mr. Barrett's mother if her son ever, you know, hit her a few slaps himself practicing. Not the most tactful man in the world. Irish listeners will know who I'm talking about.
What did she say?
Oh, she said no. Thankfully.
Wow. Oh, dear. Rob, you've been unmoved.
It'd be the equivalent, basically, of Garth Crooks asking Freddie Eastwood if he ever, you know, raised his hand to his mother or his sister.
Now, Premier League. I'm not sure what the odds are on who are going to be the three going down at the end of the season, but we're certainly going to have a clearer idea by next Monday because, Barry, the bottom 11, is it? Everyone from 10th downward is playing each other.
Yes. Newcastle are playing Sunderland, and that's a match I suspect Sunderland fans will be relishing and Newcastle fans will be dreading because the signs are that Newcastle are look increasingly doomed. They're plummeting down the table, they're out of the cup, and all is good.
Michael Owen out for 6 weeks, Joe Barton out for 10.
Michael Owen is out for, I'm not sure how long.
6 weeks, they say.
Joey Barton is out.
Joe Kinnear's still in
and looking increasingly out of his depth. He's blaming everyone except himself for
he's
his
also
team
said
shortcomings.
That Mike Ashley is totally skint, that he can barely pay the wages of the players, which is not very motivating, I think.
It isn't. Shea Given was rested for the game against Man City. He
wasn't rested, he had a knee injury.
Oh, my mistake. So will he be recovering in time to make the trip to Eastlands forthwith?
I suspect he will. Yeah. They reckon he'll almost certainly go to Manchester City before the end of the transfer window. What that says about Shea Given, I don't know. His lack of ambition is just astounding.
What, you're saying it's unambitious to go and join them?
Oh, absolutely. It's just like leaping out of the frying pan into the fire. I mean,
you said this on Monday. I don't know if I agree with that. I think Man City are a team, although their present is pretty horrible. They are a team with many different potential futures, some of which are very bright. And I think in the meantime, they are making steps away from the danger zone. And the victory over Newcastle was certainly part of that.
They're also paying incredibly high wages. So as a professional footballer, if you're playing for Newcastle, an offer from Man City, I would jump at it.
Talking about English goalkeepers earlier, what does it mean for Joe Hart? Probably by far the best young goalkeeper in England, who will now be presumably sat on the bench. It's another problem there.
Very
but I think it's not a bad move for Newcastle. If they get over 10 million, Harper is possibly the best reserve keeper or one of the best in the Premiership. So as losses go of a very good player, I think this is kind of fairly tolerable if they can use the money elsewhere, which they need to.
Excellent point.
I just wonder if now with Hull beginning to lose their way a little bit, whether the sort of big relegation fight is actually going to be a bit of a non-event in the end, because it looks as if the usual suspects are actually being
well. Hull are still
in
some way off, but they have had six straight defeats. But you can see all sorts of teams getting sucked into that. Fulham, for example.
I think Fulham will be fine. I think they'll get enough home points. They play some really good stuff. Good defense. I think some incredibly poor teams will stay up this year because it's just such a... I mean, you could easily see the three promoted teams going down, but that would leave Newcastle, Portsmouth, who are a complete shower. Middlesbrough playing poorly. I don't think they're in any danger at all, but they're playing dreadfully at the moment.
Have you mentioned Portsmouth yet?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's mention them again.
They're in a mess.
Right.
But Middlesbrough have lost like six of their last... nine, I
they
think.
Have, but I found a good stat about Middlesbrough. It's something like eight of the last nine seasons they've finished between 11th and 13th. They always go through these spells. Sometimes they go slightly higher, but they always end up, they'll beat a big team and it'll kickstart them. I think they have too many good players to... When you look at what else is around them, I think they have too many good players.
Spurs were looking better in their victory, but they've done this before.
They have, but they... If Spurs go down, I'd be...
Wait, is there going to be a big name casualty this year, Rob Smythe?
Yeah, possibly. I think Newcastle have a real danger.
That's the one you think. What do you think, Rafa?
Well, as I just said a minute ago, I don't think there will be. I think in the end it'll be actually be the usual suspects,
right,
who we see go down. I mean, with the possible exception of Hull, who've done so well in the first half of the season, it have just done enough to keep themselves above water. But I think the other one, all the others have just a bit too much quality. Yes, yeah, not too good to go down, all that stuff. But I think they really are, especially in this league, because the second half of the table is actually quite weak. So if you have a bit of quality, it's probably enough to keep you in this time.
I agree with that. But two of the only bits of quality Newcastle have, Owen and Barton, are now out for quite a while. So they're fairly short.
They also have very... even before last night, they had a very bad injury list.
Yeah.
And I can't see them getting out of it at all. They just look doomed. But even their fans seem to have this air of even more fatalism than usual about them, you know. So
once it goes at this time stage of the season, once your form goes, it could be really hard to get back. I remember Norwich in 94 were seventh at Christmas and went down because it went and they couldn't claw it back. And that maybe applies to Newcastle, certainly Portsmouth, and even more so Hull, who are in freefall.
Wow. Well, it is a big weekend. Bolton taking on Spurs. Fulham against Portsmouth, Hull, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Blackburn, Stoke, Man City and Newcastle, Sunderland. What a huge match there. Monday should provide further enlightenment to clouded minds everywhere. In the meantime, many, many thanks, Rob Smythe. Great to see you again.
Thanks, James.
Hey, Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you.
Lovely. And Barry Glendening.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Thank you, producer Pete. Thank you, the listener. Have a splendid weekend. And we'll be back on Monday.